Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Yeah, so anywhere, where was I? I was contemplating the fact that I thought it was springtime. Maybe not so much. But in any event, welcome to our program. It's 4 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we strive to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful right here at the start of your day. Take down our number and join us if you wish. It's toll-free, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Coming up just about half an hour from now, we are joined by Mission Network News and their executive director. You know, we always love talking with the executive director, Greg Yoder, at Mission Network News. That's a nonprofit news agency that reports mostly to Christians in North America what's going on with Christians all over the world. So we're looking forward to Greg Yoder joining us later this morning into the 7 o'clock hour. Just so you know, our great friend Paul Stanley at ChristianPost.com, the world's largest online news source of Christian-based news and content based in the Washington, D.C. area. Paul Stanley, the editorial page editor at ChristianPost.com, joins us later this morning. And I'm looking forward to talking to him in particular. You know, we've got this very interesting scenario playing out. And my goodness, if this does not tell you how dramatically our culture has changed, probably ostensibly just in the last 5 or 6 years or so, but certainly in the last 18 months to 2 years, if the reaction to Billy Graham in, of all places, North Carolina, does not tell you that American culture is changing rapidly, I don't know how many more signs we could hope for. Now, Paul Stanley from ChristianPost.com. Christian Post is doing a great job reporting on this, probably one of the only media outlets that's reported on this, except for our friends at SRN News, our network news provider here at Faith Radio. They've covered this somewhat. But what's going on is that the state of North Carolina, they have chosen to install a Billy Graham statue at the U.S. Capitol building. Now, just so you know, if you've never been in the U.S. Capitol, I certainly recommend a tour there sometime, if you can create that kind of opportunity for yourself. But every state in the union, all 50 states in our nation, they are allowed to have some sort of display, some sort of statue or something commemorating their individual state on display there in the U.S. Capitol building. And for many, many years, the state of North Carolina has had a statue of a former governor of North Carolina. Okay, that kind of makes sense. The legislature in the state of North Carolina, House and Senate and the existing governor, they passed and signed a statue that said North Carolina will replace that statue. We choose as a state to put a statue of Billy Graham in the U.S. Capitol. Well, my goodness, you would have thought that where did the other page of the script go here? I mean, you would have thought that the earth was spinning off its axis. The idea that, for some, in the minds of some, the idea that the esteemed, internationally known Christian evangelist, and I want to say just an esteemed man of integrity, man of God, Billy Graham, the idea of putting his statue on display in a government building, perish the thought, it is just touching off a crisis, at least in the minds and hearts of some, like nobody anticipated. So anyway, we'll get that information from Paul Stanley at ChristianPost.com coming up later this morning. When we continue, let's not ignore the very ugly elephant in our living room. We've got some serious problems with terror recruitment. It's going on probably in Los Angeles, yes, probably in New York City, maybe even in Washington, D.C., but it's happening in the upper Midwestern states. Our great friend Colonel Tony Schaefer from the London Center for Policy Research has an update for us on what happened yesterday and over the weekend with the arrest of six terror suspects and massive killings overseas on the shores of Syria, massive killings of Christians at the hands of the Islamic State. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us next. Stand by, 6:08 Central Time for the Faith Radio Network.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's 9 minutes past the hour. I am Austin Hill. It's the Faith Radio Network. Over the weekend, we were confronted with some horrific news, another mass killing of Christians overseas, committed at the hands of terror thugs with the Islamic State terror group. And then yesterday, we got the word of a terror plot breakup and more signs of terrorism recruitments going on in the upper Midwestern states. Note this portion of a report from CBS News.
These are the type of terrorism-related arrests that we're seeing more often in the U.S. This roundup of suspects came on Sunday after a joint terrorism task force investigation by the FBI. Six people taken into custody. The FBI has been investigating alleged supporters of terrorist groups in the Minneapolis area, dozens of whom have traveled or attempted to travel overseas since 2007. Some are in their teens.
This kind of news really does serve to wake us up, I hope, and make it very clear this terrorism thing is not just something that's happening in the Middle East. Radical Islam is not just something that's happening out there somewhere. It is here. Fortunately, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is here, retired from the U.S. Army. He's with the London Center for Policy Research, one of our go-to experts here in our program. Colonel Schaefer, welcome back. Thank you for being available this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Austin. Good to be on.
Let's take a step back from the terror plot breakup. We'll get to that, the domestic news here in just a moment. Give us your assessment of what we saw transpire, this horrific mass killing of Christians again in the Middle East over the weekend.
Well, the Middle East is on fire. I mean, we're talking about essentially ungoverned spaces where any religious minority, the Christians in particular, have been targeted. I mean, let's be clear here. This is not simply a battle of religions. It's a battle of civilization. You're talking about ISIS being pure evil and the Christians being one of the primary targets who have been targeted over and over again. And it's not going to get any better. So I think we need to recognize it's not ostensibly a Christian nation as much as you and I have spoken a number of times about. I think often we want to turn the other cheek and let, you know, live and let live. These people are not going to allow it to happen. And as much as I'm not for our expeditionary operation of our troops going forward, mm-hmm. we need to take this threat seriously. We need to do things which are going to essentially help those Christian communities overseas who are literally want to be just left alone and live their lives. They're not going to be left alone. And no one is going to be left alone as long as ISIS is allowed to prevail on, you know, in these spaces and do what they're doing.
Tony, I was struck by the fact that a report from USA Today yesterday, actually their report, their initial report on this mass killing of Christians on the shores of Libya over the weekend, they actually, I think it was the last line in the story, and you and I emailed about this, but the last line in the story notes that this turmoil has come about in no small part because of the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya back in 2011. I don't think most Americans realize our president, our current government, called for the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. This after what every president since Richard Nixon back in the 1970s had said, leave him there, leave well enough alone. This will make matters worse if this guy gets removed. But I got to believe people overseas around the world realize America stirred up this trouble. Is it accurate to say that we stirred up this trouble, and are people around the world observing that?
Absolutely. Let me hit this in two pieces, and I don't want to make this a political announcement, but let me be very clear on this. First, I met with the chief of Egyptian intelligence, General Al-Tohimi, to talk about this very issue last year. And he said flat out, you Americans caused this, and I do believe that. His belief is, and I second it, is that by removing Gaddafi, we added chaos to the region where none existed. So when you have this level of chaos, and I would argue ungoverned space being the magnet that pulls terrorists in, do you allow for the elements of Ansar al-Sharia, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or Al-Qaeda on the Islamic Maghreb? All these terrorist groups thrive. And so when this happened in Egypt, in Libya, you left open the door for all sorts of terrorist groups. Now ISIS has filled that vacuum. And let me be very direct on this. I'm going to say it like it is. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton advised President Obama to go forward with the removal of Gaddafi. There's no other way to put it out there. I'm not saying anything more than this is the fact. This is what happened. And so when you put that all together, we actually, you know, President Obama and his team, in particular Hillary Clinton, really were instrumental in removing what was essentially a safety plug that kept governance in place. It was not democracy. It was not any governance that we would appreciate, but it was one which allowed that country to continue to be an economic and civilly stable entity. With his removal, you now see what's happened. And so also over the weekend, the capsizing of the freight, trying to make it from Libya to Europe, same thing. So this chaos all ensued from our removing the absolutely.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he's retired from the U.S. Army. He's now with the London Center for Policy Research, a nonprofit think tank in the Washington, D.C. area. He's on our news line here on the Faith Radio Network. Tony, a couple more questions. Can you hold for 60 seconds? Okay, stand by. We'll continue with Colonel Schaefer. My friend, my fellow believer, my brother and sister, this is very, very serious, very important information. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm not trying to manipulate the facts. But as Colonel Schaefer said, these are the facts. And this is not just something that's happening on the shores of Libya. It's not just happening in Yemen. It's not just Iraq. It's not just Iran. It is here in the U.S. We'll ask Colonel Schaefer his thoughts on the arrests and the ongoing youth recruitment of ISIS terrorists in the upper Midwestern states and across America. We'll get to that next. 16 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
We began with new arrests in a high-level terror investigation. Six people were arrested Sunday in Minneapolis and San Diego. It is part of an investigation into youth who traveled or tried to travel to Syria.
Officials say some of those taken into custody may have been planning to fight with ISIS and other terror groups.
The voice of anchors at CBS News just a few hours ago. It's 19 past the hour. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. Youth recruitments by the Islamic State. We have talked about this before on the program, and now this is actually happening. There's clear evidence of this. It's in the headlines. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer retired from the U.S. Army. He's with the London Center for Policy Research, a nonprofit educational group in the Washington, D.C. area. Tony, I wish I didn't have to say this, but you've been right all along, and you're on all these national TV programs and some that lean to the left and some that lean to the right. Your message has been consistent. This recruitment is going on here in the U.S., and we need to take it seriously. What more would you add in light of this arrest of youth from Minneapolis and San Diego?
Well, Austin, I take no pride in being right about something as tragic as it is. Unfortunately, it's the reality we face. And I'm glad you phrased it the way you did. It's like, what more can we do? Well, we need to recognize a couple things. First, ISIS has been more effective than any other global terror organization in networking and using social media to kind of bring together like-minded people. Part of the problem has been within the United States, you have these small enclaves. You have them in Minneapolis. You have them in Michigan. You have them in other major cities where we've allowed for the children of these Muslim extremists. And let's be direct here. This is a Muslim faith. This is not any other faith. This is the Muslim faith who has a very severe cancer now basically hurting it. And these communities allow their kids to go to U.S. public schools, but the moment they get home, they get plugged into the internet, and they get to watch these really horrid jihadi sites overseas. There's really no stopping it. And so what we've had, what we've allowed for over the past 20 years, is these kids to become self-radicalized to the process of home indoctrination. And that's why you see these things popping up now. What we have to be aware of, what we need to look at now, is not so much these kids trying to go overseas, is what happens when ISIS calls for them to do jihad in place. That is to say, hey, we don't need
Syria, you go ahead and self-organize and do terrorist attacks inside the United States. So I think that's what is going to happen. The more effective we are in stopping them from leaving, the more likely it's going to become that they'll be doing their own jihad here. This is like a bubble about to burst. So this is something I think we all have to take seriously. James Comey, the director of the FBI, has a very difficult job of, one, to stop these guys before they act, if he can. But unfortunately, Austin, I think it's inevitable, as much as I think we've put a pretty good virtual fence around these folks. One's going to get through, and a terrorist attack or two is going to happen. We saw this in the Boston terror attack 2 years ago, where extremists made it through. I think, unfortunately, we're looking at the same thing again.
You noted earlier, as we were talking about the battle for what is the Middle East, you said it's a battle of civilizations. You said that Christians, and I think you brought Jews into this, Christian and Jews just kind of want to live and let live. I think Christians certainly in the U.S. want to live that way. But you noted that it's a battle of civilizations, and Christians are being targeted in the Middle East. Is there a battle of civilizations evolving here in the U.S.?
Well, absolutely. Again, we traditionally have allowed people to assimilate. My great-grandparents came over on the Lusitania about 1910, and they settled in the Middle West and they became Americans. And I think what we've allowed, especially with the Internet and other modern technologies, is allowed for people to come here but not really give up their old ways. They become essentially Ethiopian American or Somali American. While I appreciate people identifying culturally with their old country, what they've also brought is some of the bad habits and bad beliefs. And I think this is where it's different than 100 years ago. And that's why I think we need to be wary of any organization, any people who do not accept the Constitution as their primary governance, and somehow believe that Sharia or some other alternate faith or legal system allows for them to essentially give people who do not believe with them lesser status, and, oh, by the way, women. So I think this is where we got to draw a line in the sand saying, you know, either we accept the Constitution as our way of thinking and governance, or you don't. And if you don't agree with that, then you need to go somewhere else. But I think that we've allowed this to happen over the past 100 years, and we're now going to probably pay the price for having allowed it to happen.
Colonel Schaefer, final question. Of course, one of our main broadcast areas where our program is being heard is the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, as you know. Sure. And the Twin Cities area is home to, I want to say, a very high concentration of evangelical Christian churches. There's an enormous number of evangelical Christian and Catholic colleges and universities. There would seem to be a very vibrant Christian community, and certainly in other regions of the Midwestern states, the evangelical Christian community is quite vibrant indeed. I always ask you this. What advice do you give to the Christian community specifically in terms of waking up and, you know, smelling the French roast, so to speak, recognizing this for what it is, but how can we be people that make a difference and improve the situation?
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I think good Christians need to continue to pray, number one. I mean, I think the power of prayer is very powerful. Also, I mean, encourage your political leaders to do the right thing here. I mean, I'm not a neocon. I don't believe we got to be projecting force forward. But we have to recognize that foreign threats have now had influence on our own land, and we have to do more to stop that. Again, we don't want bombs going off in the Home Depot in your local town. So this is going to get real very quickly if we don't do something to do more to stop it overseas. So this is where I think that we need to be more active and encourage the political powers that be to do the right thing and stop ISIS immediately. Austin, the bottom line is General Dempsey, President Obama, they're not out to win against ISIS. They're just to kind of let it roll down the road, and we got to encourage them to win the war.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer from the London Center for Policy Research in Washington, D.C. Colonel Schaefer, as always, thanks so much. You are I say this every time, you're a voice of reason in troubled times. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Good to be with you. It's 25 past the hour. From the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues. It's 26 past the hour. From the Faith Radio Network, good morning. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings, 6 till 8 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Weekdays at 12 noon Central Time, it's the Connecting Faith program from Faith Radio. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem spoke with author Trillia Newbill. They talked about her book, United, Captured by God's Vision for Diversity. Let's listen in.
Lifeway Christian Resources, their research division, did a study, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but a staggering number of people felt like their church had done enough to build diversity. Yet, we read these statistics and we know that churches are just not diverse. And so I think part of the disconnect is understanding that the laws have changed and then maybe being apathetic. So either you're not caring or you just don't know, don't realize that we really have not made much progress in those areas, such as church life. And this is something that we really need to think about if we are to reflect those last days that we see in Revelations 5 and 7. We need to at least be thinking about it. And what does the body, I just think, what does the Word of God say about being adopted into a new family? If this is true, we aren't seeing that reality played out within our churches. And so it's something that I want to at least bring to people's attention that this is something we should be thinking through, praying through, and working towards the reality that we see in Revelations.
I think we look forward with anticipation to that, you know, that day some from every tribe and tongue and nation, but somehow we think, well, that'll just be in heaven. That doesn't have to be here, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we look towards it, and we have them, those scriptures on note cards and we rejoice at the thought of it, but yet it's hard for us to put our faith into action in this area and put feet to pursuing those who are not like us. And I really believe that, yes, we can look at the big church and say, okay, our churches aren't diverse, but what we need to do in order to make anything happen is to look at each individual. Okay, what is it that I am doing? What is it that the Lord is, how might the Lord convict my own heart? Because, it really takes each individual to evaluate and to pursue this, if rather than necessarily this big old church movement, if that makes sense. Does that make sense,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I just think, too, that maybe we don't realize how, I guess, you know, statistically, I'm just looking at the Kainos movement, the website, and they say sociologists define a multi-ethnic church as being one in which no one ethnicity makes up more than 80% of the whole. So it's kind of the 80-20 rule. And so if a church of 100 has 80 white people, the rest are other ethnicities, it qualifies to be multi-ethnic. And using the 80-20 rule, only 2.5% of all churches in the United States qualify as being multi-ethnic. That's pretty sobering.
That's from yesterday's episode of Connecting Faith with host Neil Stavem. Today, Neil welcomes in-studio guests Bill and Joyce Harley to talk about their book, Surviving an Affair. Today, 12 noon Central Time from Faith Radio. It's now 30 minutes past the hour. I'm Austin Hill. Great to have you with us. SRN News on the way in seconds. Good morning. It's now 35 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday mornings, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we strive to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful all at the same time. We don't ignore or shrink from the day's news, but we seek to understand it through the lenses of our Christian faith. How about the sufferings of Christians abroad? That's something that's probably for most of my lifetime, and you'd probably agree for yours as well if you've lived in all your life in North America, U.S. or Canada, either one. It's been, I guess, relatively easy to ignore the sufferings of Christians living in oppressed nations around the world. It's getting increasingly more difficult not to see evidence of it, however. One of the people that brings to light the true dealings of the church specifically, and a group that calls us to action and to prayer both, Greg Yoder from the Mission Network News Agency. You hear Mission Network News reports on Faith Radio throughout the day. Greg Yoder is the organization's executive director. He joins us on our guest line once again. Greg, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Well, it's great to be back with you, Austin.
You have some interesting news on missionnews.org about Christians specifically in the, rather beleaguered nation of Iraq. You and I have talked about Iraq many, many times over the last several months. What's the latest with Christians specifically in that country?
Well, we met up with an organization called Vision Beyond Borders late last week, and actually this aired earlier this week. The organization is called Vision Beyond Borders, and their president actually was there. Patrick Klein was just there and visiting several of the refugee camps in northern Iraq and kind of the Kurdistan areas and along the border of Turkey. And he asked this question, could this happen to us in America? And what he's referring to is a lot of the Christians, or Iraqi Christians, who were very middle class. They had college educations. They had great businesses. They had nice homes. They had bank accounts. They had children in college. Many of them had children in regular schools and learning just like that we would learn here in the United States. And then all of a sudden, ISIS came to Mosul and said, "Are you Christians? If you're Christians, you need to either convert, you need to pay a tax, you need to leave, or you're going to die." And many of them, 250,000 refugees that are now living in Iraq, many of them are Christians. There are another 426 refugees from Iraq that are actually living in Iraq, too. And then about 1.9 million internally displaced people. Now, when he caught up with the Christians said to Patrick, they said, "Patrick, we believe that God may be chastising us." And he says, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Well, we had abandoned our Bibles. We stopped reading them. We had abandoned prayer. And now we're having devotions with our families every single day. Even though we've lost everything, we have no idea what's happening next. But we're now with our Savior. We know our first love. We haven't lost our first love. We acknowledged our first love when we had to make a choice." And to me, that was just so sobering.
This is very sobering. I have this news piece that you wrote, Greg Yoder, at missionnews.org. I've got this in front of me here on the computer in our studio, and that's the opening line that you use. Quote, "Could this happen to us in America?" That was the question from Patrick Klein, president of Vision Beyond Borders, following his recent trip to northern Iraq. Now, I take it in all of this, as I've read your story and as you're describing to us, Mr. Klein is an American. He traveled from the U.S. to visit the Iraqi Christians. Am I following that correctly?
Yes, you are following that correctly.
Yeah. So what's the answer? I mean, listen, Greg, you and I, we talk periodically, you know, we message each other, you know, off air, and we share notes and connect on a variety of different levels. I see trouble coming here in our homeland, and I think the plight of the Christians abroad is a great lesson for us.
When you look at what's happening in the United States today with our borders that are open, there are more Middle Easterners coming across our southern borders today than there are Mexicans, if you can believe that. There is a belief that there are sleeper cells in the United States, and I'm not trying to be an alarmist. That's just the reality of life. And we're just a few laws away from people saying, "Hey, Christians, you guys can't practice your faith freely." And if some of the legislation that we've seen come through with hate crime legislation, this could be just the beginning of what we see, attacks on Christians. And if ISIS somehow mobilizes here in the U.S., we could be facing very much similar circumstances. Now, I don't know if this is going to happen tomorrow or 10 years or 20 years or however long. But the question is, are we ready? Are we ready to be persecuted for our faith? Now, Jesus told us that we would be persecuted for our faith. "If you love me," he said, "they'll hate you." And so we need to realize that first and foremost, that if we're real, true believers and followers of Jesus Christ and we're sharing the gospel, we will not be liked. We will be hated. And so this is something that could be the mark of who we are as believers in Christ.
I would couple your remarks here today, Greg Yoder from Mission Network News, with the reality that, in fact, even just in the previous half hour, I don't know if you're listening online, but in the previous half hour this morning, we were talking about arrests of possible terror suspects in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis-St. Paul area where our network is headquartered, and arrests of American youth who were likely terror suspects as well in San Diego, California. I mean, what's striking me is very interesting. And our conversations here on our program with you, Greg Yoder, are usually focused on Christians abroad. That's what Mission Network News focuses on. But the reality over there is rapidly becoming reality over here. And so here we are really in unison, in unity with Christians in other parts of the world, or at least anticipating that we might be. You wrote this story, this very striking story on the website here about this this American's visit to Iraq. I'm guessing that that sense of unity with Christians abroad probably crossed your mind and probably struck you the way it's striking me right now.
Oh, it is. In fact, over the weekend, I was just in northern Michigan at a community gathering of people who have caught the vision for praying for the persecuted church. There were more than 70 people from various churches represented in this kind of smaller community, and they've made it a priority to pray for the persecuted church every single Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And my question is, why aren't more communities doing this and praying for the persecuted church and standing up for them? Because they are us. We are them. Mm-hmm. And we here in the United States can do something about it. We can pray. And frankly, prayer is powerful. There is power in prayer. And I would just like to encourage people listening to us to begin prayer efforts within their churches, because it is coming. I don't know when, but it is coming.
Yeah. Greg Yoder, he is the executive director of Mission Network News, a nonprofit news agency headquartered here in the U.S. He and his associates report to us here on the North American continent mostly, but worldwide. They report to us on the plight of churches and Christians living in oppressed regions of the world. And a conversation that we might not have anticipated having only a few months ago, we're having it now. We'll continue with Greg Yoder in just moments. 43 past the hour. Make that 44 past the hour. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 46 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we strive to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful, all at the same time. We don't ignore the events of our life and times and of our world. We embrace them. We face them forthrightly and honestly. This is an honest conversation. I'm conducting this to the best of my ability, and I'm glad you're with us, glad you're supportive of this conversation. Greg Yoder is the executive director of Mission Network News, a nonprofit news agency whose reports you hear periodically throughout the day here on Faith Radio. He's on our news line. Greg, interestingly enough, this is that we're just talking about the similarities, perhaps the coming similarities between Christians in Iraq and Christians in the United States of America. You also have this very interesting story about kids' Christian summer camp activities, not just here in the U.S., but I would want to say very American-styled activity going on in parts of Eastern Europe, for example. Tell us about kids' Christian summer camp experiences.
Well, there are a lot of summer camps that are going on. It used to be a way of life in the former Soviet Union, where they would send kids off to camps to learn the ways of communism and socialism. And so they would have these camps in the summertime, and it just kind of became a way of life. Well, when the Iron Curtain kind of came down, those camps kind of went vacant. And what many of the churches did was they went to camp. They took these kids, instead of taking them to communist boot camp, they took them to Christian camp and introduced them to the gospel. And many of these camps have been going on for years. Well, they couldn't be even any more important than they are now, especially when you look at what's happening between Ukraine and Russia, mm-hmm. and even some of the other former Soviet bloc nations, where there are a lot of young people who are in orphanages, who are in poor families, who are basically being wards of the state, and they just need some love. And when Christians reach out to them and invite them to camps, they hear the gospel for the very first time, and many of these kids come to know Jesus, and because they're actually working within some of these orphanages and even some of the schools, they're actually able to develop a relationship with these young people, and they're becoming the next generation of church members in the former Soviet Union, and there are a lot of areas in which some of these groups are working. Slavic Gospel Association is one organization that's doing some great work with summer camps. Another one is Mission Eurasia. They do a lot of work with some of the non-Baptist evangelical churches within the former Soviet bloc nations, and we're helping to support them here in the United States. Obviously, their economy is not real good right now. And so sending someone to camp for $41, or, you know, which is the equivalent to probably a 2 week salary for some people in many of these nations, right. It's not really affordable. And so we can kind of come alongside these organizations and literally send dozens, if not thousands, of kids to summer camp this summer.
Greg Yoder, Executive Director from Mission Network News, on our guest line. Greg, what would you want to leave us with here on our morning program? There's this tremendously positive news about kids attending Christian summer camp in otherwise very beleaguered parts of the world, in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, Russia, Ukraine, and so forth. And rather chilling news. I think it's a net positive, but rather chilling news nonetheless, about the potential very serious similarities between Christians in America and Christians in Iraq. The world is upside down. You and I follow news and world events very, very carefully. What would you want to leave us with here, those of us listening who are Christians here in the United States of America?
Don't let apathy become your mantra. We can't be apathetic anymore. We have to do something. Let James 1:22 be your battle cry. Be a doer of the word and not just a hearer. You know, we can learn all we want about Scripture, and we can be a part of little small group Bible studies, but unless we're doing something about our faith, you know, James was very clear, you know, faith without works is dead, and that's not meaning that we're going to get saved because of our works, but we're doing the works out of just gratefulness to a holy God for saving us, and we can't be apathetic in this fallen world anymore.
Well stated, as always. Greg Yoder, Mission Network News. Find him at missionnews.org. Greg, thanks, as always, for what you do, and thanks for your time this morning. We look forward to speaking again soon.
And thank you, guys. We appreciate you so much.
Great to be with you. It's now 51 past the hour. Be doers of the word. Very very wise insight from our friend Greg Yoder. I would note that the noted pastor and theologian Francis Chan recently went viral with a sermon that he preached in his church out in California, saying that American Christians are getting fat off the word. Need to get out and mobilize and put the word to action. That was Francis Chan's take on it, and we're hearing something very similar again from Greg Yoder. Now 52 past the hour, it's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I am Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. Don't go away. It's now 53 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Weekday afternoons 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Susie Larson hosts her program Live the Promise. Yesterday, Susie talked with Amani Mustafa about her testimony of escaping Islamic oppression in Egypt. Here's part of that discussion.
Up to this point, now you're married to a Muslim man, and he did promise you you could practice your Christian faith, but that didn't exactly turn out so well. And you've got your kids, and you're forced to read them from the Quran, and you're saying, I feel like I'm feeding them poison. Maybe pick it up from there. And I mean, I'm trying to imagine the kind of courage and conviction it took for you to walk this story out, but pick it up from there.
I mean, you have to understand at this time, I was more of, you know, I was just there to protect the kids and raise them and make sure that I have a chance to stay with them. Because at this point, as a Muslim woman, I have no rights. And if he would reveal that I'm a convert, I would never see my kids again. Mm. As a convert, you lose your right to everything, your inheritance, you're cut off from the family. And I just cried out to God and I said, help me. And he did. He sent my mother back to Egypt, and she went to my husband and told him, hey, you guys are struggling here. Why don't you come with us to the States? And he said, okay. And miraculously, God would extract me and the kids. And my husband signed off. He told her, go ahead and take Emeni and the kids first, and I will follow. And I don't know why he said that. He even didn't know why he said that. And we did. Mom booked the tickets, and we took off. We left.
So were you holding your breath all the way till that plane took off?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, where I lived, it was about 2 hours away from the airport. And all through the way, he was screaming at me and telling me he was not going to let us go. And telling me, I don't know why did I let you go. I'm just going to tear your paper, the release paper. You know, you're a piece of property, so he has to release you. And he would scream at me at 2 hours.
All the while you're driving to the airport.
He's driving and screaming and yelling. And I'm like, okay, all right, okay. And just, I'm thinking he's not going to let me go at this point. And he took us in all the way to the airport and to the plane door.
Almost like against his own will.
It was. And I think more at this point, I realized there's something miraculously going on. Mm-hmm. The miracles that happened started to come together. And when the plane took off, as soon as they turned the light off, I took my veil off. My son was about 7 at the time. My daughter was 6. And he looked at me and he said, Mom, you're going to go to hell. And I said, son, we just left.
Wow. Wow. Did you hear that? Amazing, amazing story. That was, you know, sometimes I just try to maintain composure and stay focused on hosting the program and executing one step after another, sitting behind this microphone. But sometimes the things I hear from others pulsating through my headphones here are just amazing. That was one of them. Amani Mustafa, a guest of Susie Larson on her program, Live the Promise. Coming up on today's episode of Susie's program, she'll talk with Bill and Pam Farrell as they discuss their new book, The Secret Language of Successful Couples. That's the Live the Promise program with Susie Larson, weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings. Great to have you with us. Tuesday underway into the next hour. We'll check in with our great friend Paul Stanley, the editorial editor at ChristianPost.com. ChristianPost.com, the world's largest evangelical Christian news agency. Some very interesting news out about Billy Graham, North Carolina, and the United States Capitol. We'll tell you about that. Also, Franklin Graham is out. The son, Franklin Graham, has announced that he believes the Jewish Holocaust of last century, we may very well be in the process of recreating it. It could happen all over again. Only this time, it wouldn't only be Jews, but Christians being targeted. Not just over there somewhere, but even here in the United States of America. Paul Stanley from ChristianPost.com joins us on our guest line into the 7 o'clock hour to talk about that and more. Now, at the top of the hour, of course, SRN News, our network newscast. Into the 7 o'clock hour, I want you to just strap on your virtual seatbelt here, okay? In light of news headlines that have transpired on Sunday, Monday, and now today, and in light of news stories of terrorist recruitment activity going on, not just in New York or Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. or San Francisco, but in the heartland of America, in the Midwestern United States, radical Islamic terror recruitments. After the news here at the top of the hour, we're going to go back and review some remarks made by a friend of this program, Abdu Murray, a Christian apologist who was once a Muslim himself. He predicted this ongoing process of the appeal of radical Islam to Western youth. And he had some very strong words for churches about that. All this coming up next hour. Stay with us.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning to Tuesday underway. We thought it was spring, but somebody threw it in reverse, if you know what I'm saying. Kind of chilly in parts of the upper Midwest, but we press on. Great to have you with us. I am Austin Hill. Honored to be here weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful all at the same time. Indeed, we don't ignore the times of our lives. We don't ignore the ever-changing, ever-shifting country that we live in and the world that has been turned upside down. No, we embrace it. We talk about it. And we try to understand what's going on through the lenses of our Christian faith. Coming up in just about 20 minutes from now, Breakpoints with John Stone. Tarits, we'll be hearing from him, so stand by for that. And later in the 7 o'clock hour, later this hour, about half an hour from now, Paul Stanley from ChristianPost.com is the editorial page editor. He's actually, Christian Post is headquartered in Washington, D.C. He works out of the Memphis, Tennessee area. Wonder how cold it is in Memphis. I'll look that up. Maybe we can talk a little bit about this spring being thrown in reverse. But anyway, Paul Stanley, more importantly, will be talking with us about several different issues that ChristianPost.com is reporting on. And one of them, if you have any doubt, if there's any question that America has changed radically and rapidly in terms of its cultural stance and what is normative and what is normal, if there's any doubt that we have not undergone some radical shifts and changes in the time span of, about 5.5 years or so, I think you can look at this situation involving Billy Graham, the state of North Carolina, and the U.S. federal government as a conclusion that indeed things have changed rapidly. I'll be asking Paul Stanley about this, but briefly what's going on. If you've ever been to the U.S. Capitol, you've probably observed this. If you've never gone, if you're an American or even if you're from another part of the world, I encourage you to take the tour when and where you can. But in the U.S. Capitol, every state in the union, all 50 of our United States, they have available space where they can display something that is supposed to be emblematic of that individual state. Okay, so whatever state you reside in, your state has some kind of presence, some kind of physical representation in the U.S. Capitol. North Carolina has for, I want to say, the bigger part of a century now. I think this dates back maybe even more than 100 years, but nonetheless, they've had the statue of a former governor of their state on display in the U.S. Capitol. And owing to the fact that Billy Graham is elderly, getting on in years, he is in failing health, I think that's safe to say. He's stable so far as we know, but he's not doing well. Owing to that, the legislature in the state of North Carolina, the House of Representatives and the Senate there in that state, they passed this initiative. The governor signed it into law. And the plan now is that the state of North Carolina would remove out of the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C., the statue of their former governor, and they want to install, they've already voted on it. The state has decided they will install in the U.S. Capitol a statue of Reverend Billy Graham. Billy Graham being from North Carolina, of course. Well, nobody seemed to anticipate this, but this has touched off a firestorm of controversy in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere around the country. People saying, you've got separation of church and state. You can't have a statue of a man of the Christian gospel, not in a government building. It's a statue, for heaven's sakes. And it's a statue of another human being. This isn't even a stone carving or replication of a Bible. It's a statue of Billy Graham. And yes, Billy Graham, just the mere image of him, represents a lot. And a lot of good stuff, obviously. But the people of North Carolina seem to be in a bit of shell-shocked condition, realizing that all the pushback on a Billy Graham statue at the U.S. Capitol building. That's how this has been playing out for the last couple of weeks or so. Paul Stanley from ChristianPost.com will join us in just about a half an hour from now with an update on that. Also, Christian Post is reporting Reverend Franklin Graham has now recently stated that he believes the Jewish Holocaust may be in the process of being recreated. That is to say, the cultural conditions, not only in the U.S., but certainly in other parts of the world, Europe and elsewhere, cultural conditions are such that the hostility and the murderous mayhem towards Jews that we saw back last century with the rise of the Third Reich in Germany and the unwillingness of other parts of the world to rise up and to combat it, that cultural environment is being recreated, and it could manifest in another Holocaust towards Jews. But Franklin Graham, I believe, is also saying Christians may also be the targets of the next one. The next one. That's where we're at. I hope you're awake. I hope your eyes are wide open. I hope your ears are wide open. I hope you're listening and watching very carefully. This is not meant to scare anybody. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. This is our reality. And there may not be anything else on your radio dial or on your computer that pulls these things together from these kinds of angles and approaches this from a distinct vantage point of Christian faith. But that's what I have pledged to do. And that's what your support, by the way, of Faith Radio enables us to do on an ongoing basis. We are fully listener supported. So Paul Stanley coming up in about half an hour from now. When we return, we'll look at, in just a moment here, we're going to look at some of the news headlines that have confronted us all in the time span of the last 36 hours or so. And we will look back and reflect on some remarks made by a regular guest on our program. You've heard of him before, Abdu Murray, an attorney, an author, and a Christian apologist. Abdu Murray kind of predicted some things that we saw in the news just yesterday. We'll pull all that together, tell you about it next. 9 minutes past the hour, it's the Faith Radio Network.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
We began with new arrests in a high-level terror investigation. 6 people arrested Sunday in Minneapolis and San Diego. It is part of an investigation into youth who traveled or tried to travel to Syria.
Officials say some of those taken into custody may have been planning to fight with ISIS and other terror groups.
That was the beginnings of a report on the CBS News Early Morning program just yesterday. The report actually continued with these remarks.
These are the type of terrorism-related arrests that we're seeing more often in the U.S. This roundup of suspects came on Sunday after a joint terrorism task force investigation by the FBI. 6 people taken into custody. The FBI has been investigating alleged supporters of terrorist groups in the Minneapolis area, dozens of whom have traveled or attempted to travel overseas since 2007. Some are in their teens.
Pretty sobering look at life in one of the upper Midwestern states. I'm sure this goes on in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in New York City, Chicago perhaps, Washington, D.C., but it's here. It's everywhere. It's inescapable. Pretty sobering thoughts at 15 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday morning, right? Let's connect some dots here. Let me take you on a little journey back to Aaron, was this an October discussion or November? I believe that, okay, it is October. Thank you, Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass enclosed booth. Appreciate that for, appreciate you keeping us on track here. One of our regular experts that I'm privileged to speak with on an ongoing basis, Abdu Murray. He was with us one day, late October, and we had a very similar situation, a terror plot bust up in the nation of Canada. Matter of fact, I believe this was on the occasion of the terror plot's attack. It didn't get carried out all the way, but the attack on the nation's capital in Ottawa, Ontario, back last fall. Abdu Murray had some striking things to say about the appeal of radical Islam among American and Western youth, youth who live in the Western nations, U.S., Canada, Western Europe, and so forth. And I asked him, why? I mean, here we have the news from CBS just yesterday. Youth in Minneapolis and San Diego arrested for allegedly conspiring with the Islamic State. I asked Abdu Murray back last October, why would an American kid want to join up with the Islamic State? Here's how that conversation went. Let's listen in.
It is a very bizarre phenomenon, and I think sometimes it catches us off guard because we're thinking, my goodness, why are sort of white American youth or black American youth or whatever it might be in the country sort of gravitating towards this religious system that seems to just be competing for Monster of the Year in terms of these in terms of these radicals. I think that there's a couple of things that are interesting. When you look back at 2001, after 9/11, you actually had an influx, an increase in the number of converts to Islam, which is by itself a strange phenomenon because most people in the West didn't even really know that much about Islam. They didn't really care about it. It made headlines, but it didn't make that many headlines. And then suddenly, it was the only headline. And this attracted people to actually look into it, and so they suddenly were aware of it. And many of them, you know, sort of have this sort of counterculture, whatever the media tells me has to be a lie kind of a thing. And certainly that's, we have to be critical about what the media tells us, and we have to take it with a grain of salt, but we also have to, you know, look into these facts. But I think there's a culture sometimes that's been that's been sort of festering and growing since maybe even the late 90s. Among youth and among people who are in their mid-30s, for example, nowadays, of just a distrust of all things that are establishment and what's perceived as establishment. So you sort of have that happening. That's why you have these movements, you know, Occupy movements and these kind of things where you have people wanting to form some kind of a cause or do some kind of a cause and, you know, sort of fight the man, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this resurgence or this surge of people who wanted to convert to Islam after 9/11. Who knows why? Maybe it's part of the, you know, join the exotic, look into that which is not the normal. And then you have these converts. But over time, what you'll notice in some of these attacks recently, it's not like somebody converted to Islam a week ago and then suddenly starts to get radicalized and become, you know, jihading, you know, terrorists in the middle of the streets of New York or in Canada.
Right.
This festers over some time, so they convert to Islam, possibly even, we don't know enough details yet, but possibly even a moderate form of Islam, and they just believe it because they find some kind of spiritual sanction in it or some kind of solace in Islam, and then over time they become radicalized as their sort of already disenfranchised minds, not only disenfranchised in terms they've been marginalized, but they're distrusting of sort of Western governments and Western democracy and foreign policy or whatever it might be, or just angry at somebody. And
right.
This radicalization gives their anger an outlet and gives it almost a righteousness.
Yeah,
so they okay. On it.
This is profound, and I'm so glad you're with us. Abdu Murray, by the way, author of the book Grand Central Question, he's with us yet again here in our guest line on the Faith Radio Network. Abdu, I get the angst, I get the anger, I get the frustration. You need only look at, and there's a lot more to the picture, but you need only look at the unemployment statistics of American youth ages 18 to 34. We're talking about young adults, obviously, but you look at the just the devastating consequences and circumstances they find themselves in, that demographic in our society in terms of finding full-time employment, getting onto a career track, getting into the economy and building a future for themselves. It's awful. It's a terrible picture. It's just not happening with that demographic, and it's frightening to me. I get the anti-establishment, you know, we're going to rage against the man kind of thing with the Occupy Wall Street movement 3 or 4 years ago. I understand that. Here's the disconnect for me, and I'm sure you can help enlighten us. On the one hand, and this is just a sidebar here, but as much as these younger demographics in our society say, we don't trust the establishment, we don't trust the man, certainly in the last couple of elections, their voting habits have been to vote to expand the man, expand the establishment in enormous sorts of ways, with expansive government intruding into every area of our life. But the issue that you can help us address, if they're frustrated with the establishment of Western civilization and the establishment of American society, why would the Islamic State be an alternative for them? Help us understand that. I mean, that's undermining what little foundation they have, as I see it. But help us understand that.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And that's a great question, because there is an intense disconnect. You want to say that the authoritarian nature of those people who sort of keep us oppressed and the one percenters and all this stuff, and then you go over to this idealization of radicalization of Islam that says we're going to control everything about you, and if you don't listen to us, we'll behead you.
Exactly.
What? Why would you go to that? I think the reason is, though, when I see an anti-establishment sort of mentality among some people and maybe sort of a growing dissatisfaction with the status quo, it's not necessarily that they're dissatisfied with a level of control of an authority. They're not anti-authority so much as they're anti this is the religion of my grandfathers. This is the way of the old school. They did that this way, and this is the same old thing, and I'm counterculture. I have to be different. Sort of the rise in sort of the tattoo generation, where everybody and their brother has a tattoo, and we have to be different. And this is the ultimate way to be different. You want to rebel, my goodness, be the people that everyone hates, so to speak, or everyone fears.
Right.
So there's a level of an emotional appeal to it, not because it's anti-authority, but because it's anti what everyone else already is. It's this is a Christian country, so to speak, and it's Western, and these ideas are as far from Western as you can possibly get. So let's sort of look into it and see what it's about, and it's exotic, and it's cool, and it's different. And then what happens is, I don't think that they intentionally say, hey, I want to go be a radical Muslim. I think what happens is that sometimes they get involved in an Orthodox or a more moderate version of Islam in the West. You see some of the recruiting tactics of ISIS mm-hmm. and other groups like this. It's through Facebook. It's through the social media. It's through the ways that speak to these people, and it starts to tell them through the language they like. Like, they're, you know, these are people who are evil, and they're against you, and the West is trying to do this, and it's imperialistic, and if you, you know, look at our cause, we're trying to liberate people. Sure, we do horrible things to do that, but it's a boiling. It's, you know, the sort of the classic, you know, frog in the boiling water kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen right away. It ferments over time. So I think that what you have is an attraction to the exotic by people who want to do some kind of a cause-oriented thing. I mean, one of the things people say about this generation is that it's very cause-oriented. We want to get behind some kind of a cause. We want to create headlines. We want to make change. Well, one of the biggest ways for these people who have a warped sense of that, and that's what I think is also happening, they're preying on people who have a warped sense of that. See, I can be part of a cause. Oh, and this cause makes headlines? Oh, and this cause actually causes people to change things? We're going to be studying this for quite some time, I think, sociologically and psychologically.
Right.
But I do think what's happening in terms of the transformation that's happening is you have these people who have these questions, whether they're angry or they have real questions, and they begin to seek and look for answers. Everybody does this. I don't care what strata of society you're in, whether you're poor and destitute, or you're ridiculously rich and fabulously wealthy, or you're somewhere in between. There are questions we're going to be asking ourselves in our youth from our very young ages. You know, we're seeing questions. I tell you what, I go to Q&As and open forums all the time, and the younger audiences are asking the harder questions.
I'm
and
sure.
The more deeply moving questions, and people who say, I have no answers. I have despair, or whatever it might be. So they're asking the questions. The problem is we need to find out who is answering them. Are we, the church, answering them, or is someone else? So someone else gets a hold of them. In an internet age, it is not hard to get a hold of somebody pretty easily through the internet, put up a rosy picture at first about what is beautiful and lovely about your ideology, and then suddenly suck them in. I don't care what your ideology happens to be. Suck them in, and then slowly but surely turn them into seeing that, you know, you should agree with our more radical ideas. You agree with our more peaceful ideas, or our more societally transformative ideas, but then all of a sudden you realize the methods are radical. And by that time, you're knee-deep in it, maybe even waist-deep in it. And so the youth are asking questions. They're angry because they're not getting the answers from the places they might expect to get the answers.
Author and apologist Abdu Murray, an expert in the ways of divergent religious faiths, radical Islam included. Our effort to connect the dots here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. That was from last October. And now consider the headlines. Six American youths, Americans as far as we can tell, arrested in the Minneapolis area conspiring with the Islamic State. My friend, my brother and sister, time to wake up and take action. And that's what we do here on the Faith Radio Network on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. 26 past the hour from Faith Radio. Breakpoint on the way in moments. Don't go away. It's 36 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. I am Austin Hill here. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. This is the officially the... Can we call this? Can I say that? This is officially the groovy music segment of the program. Is it not? Aaron McIntyre on the other side? Okay, thank you. Can you crank that up just a little bit? That's very nice. This is the band Mercy Me. I like it. Who would have thunk? He got the bass guitar out on the front end there, mixed a little bit louder than the... Oh, that's Building 428. Well, see, I'm being led astray. You're leading me astray, Aaron McIntyre, on the other side of the glass booth. We thought it was the band Mercy Me, but no, it was the band Building 429. Be that as it may, let's move on, shall we? Billy Graham becoming controversial in the U.S. Capitol. And another Holocaust in the works? Yes, both the father and the son, Billy and Franklin Graham, are in the news in some pretty amazing ways. Over at ChristianPost.com, the world's largest news agency with a distinctly evangelical Christian perspective. Joining us on the guest line once again, our great friend Paul Stanley, the editorial page editor at ChristianPost.com. Paul, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Austin, good morning to everyone.
Good to be with you. Let's start with this whole controversy over the statue of Billy Graham possibly being placed in the U.S. Capitol. Your news agency, ChristianPost.com, has reported on this, I think like nobody else, actually. The state of North Carolina wants a statue of Billy Graham at the U.S. Capitol representing their state, and some people are really upset. What's going on here?
Well, Jake, one of the state legislators actually said he was visiting the Capitol and noticed that one of the statues, you know, each state gets two. And if you go look, for those of us who've been around the Capitol a few times, they're usually, older Americans or people who have done great things in the various 50 states.
Sure.
And they've got a former governor, Governor Aycock, there, whose statue's there. Well, he has been known for his public views on white supremacy. So the state senator visiting said, look, I think we can do better. What about Billy Graham? You know, what a great person to put there. And he went and did something very politically smart, and he got a black lawmaker from the other side of the aisle, and they sponsored the bill, and they're trying to get the statue there.
So black and white legislators from North Carolina, they crafted the initiative or the legislation. Both chambers of the legislature approved this, and as I understand it, the governor of North Carolina signed it. It's a done deal so far as North Carolina is concerned. The blockage, if you will, is at the federal level. Is that all correct?
Well, from my understanding, too, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around where that is, but, you know, each state should have the opportunity to place the statues of the various people as they wish. I think Billy Graham would be an excellent choice. I'm not going to speak to the former governor because I don't know anything about him or what he stood for, but I certainly think you can't do any better than Billy Graham, and what a great tribute to him, even while he's still alive.
I would think so. I also note here, if you just joined us, Paul Stanley, the editorial page editor at ChristianPost.com, he's on our newsline. I also should note, you are not only a professional communicator and author and journalist and editorialist, you once served as an elected state leader, a legislator from your home state of Tennessee. You know more than most people do, Paul Stanley, about how the individual states relate to the federal government and vice versa. Would this resistance to a religious figure like Billy Graham, should that have been anticipated, or is this something that maybe we would not have anticipated as recently as maybe a couple of years ago?
Well, sadly, it's okay, and I'll touch on this, and maybe actually we can talk about it at another time point. But, you know, Tennessee just tried to make the Bible the official book of the state of Tennessee, or the state book.
Right.
And it was basically, in the last body I served in, the state Senate, was basically sent back to committee, which means that's a slow death. And it's unfortunate that happens. Well, I think there is so much heightened awareness of just religious issues. Because Billy Graham represents Christianity, because he represents Christian values and faith in God, didn't our early founding fathers espouse those same views? So why did they get a statue and Billy Graham not? I think the over-political correctness that we witness just to a extreme every day is just really taking root here. So why? I don't think they can stop Billy Graham at the end of the day. I think that's going to be a little too much. I predict he will have the statue there. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there are some federal hurdles to get through, but why question him? Didn't the early founding fathers espouse Christian views?
Sure. I see where you're going with that. Paul Stanley, he is the editorial page editor at ChristianPost.com. He's on our guest line here on Faith Radio. Paul, your news agency, and I want to be very clear, you oversee the editorial content, not the news department, but I know you folks work closely with one another. The news department at ChristianPost.com reported Franklin Graham raising concerns about yet another World War II-era styled Holocaust. He's saying that hostility towards Jews has reached a boiling point once again, as it did back during the rise of the Third Reich in Germany last century. And he also, I think, is pointing out correctly that the will of otherwise good people around the world to rise up and to combat that just doesn't seem to be present in the U.S. and in Europe and other parts of the free world. Franklin Graham is also being called hyperbolic and all kinds of other more nasty names, saying, oh, this is extremism. From the editorial viewpoint, how did you take this when you saw this news?
Well, there's a couple of things that bother me in here. Number one, I want to go out on a limb and say I really hope and think this couldn't happen in America anymore. I really want to know and think that and rest assured that our country, our citizens would not let anything like this happen. Now, someone said that in Germany at some point in time, maybe a few decades before World War II and Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But it bothers me. If you look at the last part of this article written in Christian Post entitled Franklin Graham Warns Holocaust Might Be Repeated with Influence of Muslims in U.S. and Europe Who Hate Christian and Jews, when you have young Jewish men who are afraid to wear their skull caps on the streets of Paris, Budapest, London, et cetera, therein lies a huge problem. People who go into the major cities of America, like New York, who has a high Jewish population, some of the other cities are used to seeing it. But I think there is an extremism that the Muslim extremists are advocating that is anti-Semitic, and that they are not only going after those of the Jewish faith, but we know those of the Christian faith with the beheadings that maybe we'll touch on in a second.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a growing amount of extremism, because if you look back at white supremacy and the people in the dark days of this country where there was segregation and hate toward African Americans, well, we're seeing a much greater hate toward people of faith from some of the Muslim extremists. And if we don't get a handle on this, we could run into some serious problems. And I have concerns that this current administration in the White House is not doing nearly enough.
What does it mean from your vantage points to get a handle on it? That's a very important linchpin here in our conversation. And again, I ask because you have expertise not only in media and in journalism at Christian Post and elsewhere, Paul Stanley. You're a former lawmaker. You know how government and private citizens interact with one another. What does it mean to get a handle on the problem?
There has to be serious consequences for the actions of these extremist groups, whether they're in our country or operating outside of the country. And I really wish we could have a three-way conversation with Ronald Reagan right now and get his take on this, because I don't think Ronald Reagan would stand for this. I think from an international foreign policy standpoint, he would have gotten a handle on this a long time ago. I think in the ways that we can, the pragmatic ways that we can govern through legislation at the state and federal level, we're going to have to pass hate crime legislation that is not just in name only or trying to advocate, you know, one group, the homosexual group, over others for the sake of their agenda. But we have to have real hate crime legislation that goes after groups and individuals and entities who espouse views that are really hatred toward religious to other groups based on their religious views. And the like. And I think we've got to get a big handle on this, and we've got to make sure that if that happens in this country, there are very rigid and tough consequences. From a foreign policy standpoint, I would like to see the current administration use more military action to really show them that this is unacceptable and this is not going to happen anymore.
Paul Stanley is the editor of the editorial section at ChristianPost.com. He's on our guest line here on Faith Radio. Paul, talk to us, if you will, in the final question here. How is the evangelical Christian community, in your estimation, doing in terms of recognizing the serious problem of radical Islam and its reality, its real presence, not just over there somewhere in Libya or Iraq or Iran or Syria or Yemen, but right here in the United States. Are American Christians awakening to this reality? And again, I ask, recognizing your background and also recognizing that ChristianPost.com really has been one of the go-to sources worldwide for news, even about the recent slaughter of 30 Christians, we believe, on the shores of Libya over the weekend. Are American Christians getting the big picture?
American Christians at the upper levels, the leaders, the pastors, the media people, or people that are evangelicals in media, and the seminary professors, so on and so forth, the columnists, they get it. They understand this is very, very serious, and this is going to be a problem. If we don't start handling now, it's going to get out of control and already show signs of doing so. What I'm concerned about, Austin, is the great neighbors that live next door to you and I, the great Christians out there who, you know, who have great faith, who are strong believers. They're raising kids. They have families. They're going to work today. They have a ball game to coach or a PTA meeting to go to today. I think they're very lethargic. I think they know there's a problem. I think they believe they can't do anything about it, and I think they have their head in the sand. So my point is that the average Christian out there needs to wake up and needs to understand that this could be next door to you, not in a country thousands of miles away where you read about the atrocities of the beheading or the anti-Semitism that we're seeing being espoused towards our Jewish neighbors internationally. This could be next door to you in a day or a week or a year or 5 years if you don't wake up and understand what's going on and get involved to whatever extent you can.
Paul Stanley, editorial editor at ChristianPost.com, with some sobering thoughts. Paul, we appreciate what you do. Thanks very much for your thoughts and comments today. I look forward to talking again very soon.
Austin, enjoy very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too, sir. It's 48 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I am Austin Hill, here weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central. Our program continues. Don't go anywhere. It's now 49, oh, make it 50 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you. Weekday mornings at 6 till 8 Central Time as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the end of, at the beginning of your day. What am I talking about here? Losing my mind here. I've been a little overwhelmed, not in a negative way, but really... almost left with inadequate words to express in response to some of the things that we've heard from some of the very insightful guests that have been on our program this morning, really all of them. My friend, my brother, my sister, these are very strategic times that we live in. And I say strategic because I don't necessarily want to say they're troubling times or they're terrible times or they're bad times. We have got to be awake, eyes open, ears open, discerning fact from fiction. That is very, very difficult. We've got to be paying attention to things going on in our communities, in our country, in our world, that dominant news agencies pay no attention to. Pop culture ignores them. We have got to be people of discernment. And I hope that this program helps in that process of encouraging the body of Christ to be discerning. Here is yet another item that most people pay no attention to. I'm just nerdy enough. I read this news on an ongoing basis here. As you may know, I host a weekend program called Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. It is broadcast on most of the affiliates of the Faith Radio Network and elsewhere around the country. And we talk about entrepreneurship and business ownership and making money and see that through the lenses of our Christian faith. I am not an equities trader. I don't sell investments. I'm not an investment advisor. That's not what we talk about on the Big World of Small Business. Talk about making money in the first place. There's lots of great Christian leaders who will tell you how to get out of debt and invest the money that you have wisely. But I talk about the real basics of making money in the first place. One of the things, however, that we cannot ignore for the good of ourselves individually and our families and our churches and our local communities and our neighbors and in our entire nation, our entire world. One of the things we cannot ignore is the explosion of government debt. And I understand this is something that a lot of people would prefer to ignore, and there'll be people after the program today who tell me, you shouldn't talk about this on Christian Talk Radio. My friend, my brother, my sister, you and I need to be aware of this. One of the most beleaguered nations in the world when it comes to government debt is the nation of Greece. Greece, a nation that is so historically profound in the story of the church, in the story of the New Testament, in the proliferation of the gospel. Greece has been bankrupt as a government for the bigger part of 6 years, quite frankly. Ostensibly about 5 years ago is when they first basically ran out of money. And a little over 60% of the adult population of Greece works for the federal government. That leaves less than 40% of the population to produce wealth outside of government, to pay the taxes, to fund the government. It doesn't work. It's untenable. And the International Monetary Fund and all kinds of global agencies have tried to weigh in and save Greece from its own debt. And now it's at a point where even the experts who are purportedly smarter than you and me and can save us all from ourselves and our own economic bad choices, they're even throwing up their hands and saying, Greece, yeah, you can't go on like this anymore. You've got to spend less. You cannot spend more than you're taking in. Well, last Friday on the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street, a gentleman named Art Cashin, who is in charge of the operations of the New York Stock Exchange, he's being interviewed on CNBC television, and stock prices took a huge nosedive last week, and the debt of Greece is catching up to the world financial system. It can no longer be ignored. I want you to listen. It's part one of this conversation. Somebody asks Art Cashin on CNBC, one of the hosts says, why is stocks crashing today, Art? What's going on here? Listen to this.
I think the probably the media reports that Greek banks have been told to sell their sovereign debt and several people in the region. If that's so, things could heat up pretty fast. And right behind it is China's move on margins and increasing the amount of stocks that can be shorted. That was a surprise after they closed, and it knocked the futures down about 5%.
Okay, short selling of stocks is not something we're going to get into. Notice the number one problem, the lead problem he points out with our stock exchange. Greece is in trouble, and that impacts the value of the dollar and the whole global financial system. Part two, a couple of different reporters ask Art Cashin, well, who cares about Greece? Why should any of us care? Listen to this.
On Greece, we keep making this round trip, right? The concerns get acute. They push it back, or they settle something. They push it into April, May, what have you. How damaging would it be if we got into the living room, the fire got into the living room, so to speak?
Well, I think there is some concern this time in that they asked the IMF for a postponement, and the IMF gave them the back of their hand, and you saw the credit default swaps in Greece begin to pop up. So there's money being bet out there that this may come to a head, and it may come to a head quickly.
Do I really need to care about Greece? I mean, I feel as though sometimes we go back and forth about its importance, Art, in terms of the macro picture.
Well, you know, the only reason to care is that it will disrupt currency markets, because the euro without Greece is a substantially stronger euro.
All right, and that has impact on the dollar. And by the way, I think most of us would agree, a good reason to care about the country of Greece is because real human beings live there, real people with real families and real lives and livelihoods that are in jeopardy. But I play that to point out to you that debts cannot be ignored. That is a scriptural, spiritual principle. Great Christian financial coaches advise that about our households all the time, and it's true of entire nations. They've been trying for 5 years to pretend that the debt isn't there in Greece and repackage the debt and reduce the repayment terms and lower the interest rate, and their entire nation is in trouble now. And that we are one of the most in debt nations in the world, I would remind you. Pray. Take action. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow morning at 6. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program from the Faith Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.